Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with 3 Stay Green 1 cubic foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA journalist and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bon. And just like that, folks, the first quarter of the 2025 calendar is behind us, came and went in the blink of an eye. It feels like not long ago when I was in Los Angeles covering the first pay-per-view of 2025, UFC 311. And now here we are, 11 UFC events in the books. And given that, it seems like no better time to do a little recap of the first quarter of the year. Who were the standout performers, the standout moments? And then we'll also look ahead a little bit to Q2 and what's to come. That UFC schedule rapidly filling out with events. We're still absent a UFC 317 headliner, as we spent an entire podcast last week with Michael Chiesa talking about the potential headliners there. If you haven't listened to that, please go back and do. I thought we came up with some great ideas and had a lot of fun there. But joining me today to recap Q1 and preview Q2 will be none other than the former UFC bantamweight champion, the former UFC flyweight champion, the Olympic gold medalist, the co-host of the Pound for Pound podcast with Kamaru Usman. It is Triple C himself, Mr. Henry Cejudo. Whatever you may think of the Cringe Act, I truly consider Henry Cejudo to be one of the greatest minds in the sport. To be honest, his insight, his coaching ability, and just everything when it comes to combat sports, you can't really ask for anyone better. Wouldn't rather hear have anyone to come join me and help celebrate what's happened so far this year and preview a little bit of what's to come. So a lot of fun here with Henry. Please make sure to like, rate, subscribe on the show, leave a comment, whatever you can do to show a means of support on whatever platform you are listening to the program. It honestly means the world to us as we keep trying to build the show. I'm going to take a quick break and we will be right back with Henry Cejudo. We are back here on the Bonfire with a first-time guest of the pod, Mr. Henry Cejudo. Henry, so good to have you here, man, for this little Q1 review, Q2 look ahead. I know there's no one who has their mind more in-depth on the game than you. I see everything you do on your YouTube channel, the breakdowns and stuff. Yeah, happy to have you, man.
Thank you, and I hope this is, with Bonfires and everything that's going on in California, you might want to... You might want to change the name.
Hey, it's too punny with the last name. We started this before all that happened, so what more can we do?
Fair enough.
Yeah, so I guess we can get right into it, Henry. I mean, I can read off a few stats here. There's been 11 UFC events so far this year, 132 fights. The only people who have fought more than once are Kevin Holland, Vince Morales, Christian Rodriguez, and Melquisedeque Costa. And just one title change so far this year, Henry, out of 4 title fights. That was Magomed Ankalaev defeating Alex Pereira at UFC 313. So I guess I can lead off the thing here as we kind of note some of the strong performances. This one, as I kind of went through, surprised me even a little bit, but it's one of the ones that comes quickest to mind. I thought Zhang Weili at UFC 312 defeating Tatiana Suarez was one of the best showings we've seen this year. She was the underdog. Everyone thought she was going to be, the coronation for Tatiana Suarez, and it didn't turn out that way. She stuffed a lot of the takedowns and just a very, very strong reminder on that night, I thought.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, if there's anybody that could really beat Zhang Weili, it's always somebody with a really, really strong base. So I think that the simple fact that Zhang Weili, what she was able to show, okay, this is Olympic style wrestling versus MMA. You know what I'm saying? So there's a lot of, even though it could always go the other way. You know, I go back and look at people who have fought before and who have lost to just pure wrestlers. You know, I go back and I think of Joel Warren versus Kei Yamamoto. And at that time, Kei Yamamoto was in the top three pound for pound, like right behind Fedor, I believe. Or sometimes a lot of people kind of put him up top two. And then Joe Rogan, a guy with maybe 2 fights, or maybe it was his debut, I forget what it was, he was able to build him, he was able to beat him just based on his background, which was wrestling. But overall, this first half that I feel like they've been making a lot of noise. And I wish I could pinpoint somebody, but I want to, I almost want to go and just give a lot of kudos, a lot of praise to the fighting nerds.
Collectively.
With Gene Silva doing what he's been able to do, having fun with it, with the whole marketing side of it. And obviously Mauricio Hoofy. Yeah. I mean, that is to start off the year, man. I don't even think there's going to be a better knockout than that. You know what I'm saying? Like, to really start off the year. So I feel like if there's one that I can kind of gear towards and say, all right, man, this is what's been taking everybody by storm thus far. Yeah, I'm going to have to go with the fighting nerds.
Yeah, that's a great choice. I mean, we saw what John Silva did, like you said, in Seattle, the card you fought on against Melsik Begdesarian, has a huge fight lined up now against Bryce Mitchell. Bit of a shame Carlos Prochus had to flow out of that fight against Jeff Neal, but that would have been a huge night for them at 314. But yeah, I had Mauricio Rufi down on my list. That was just such a great knockout. I mean, I saw Edson Barboza like giving it props on Instagram. What do you think was the better wheel kick KO, that one or him against Terry Edom?
No, I'm gonna have to go with Barboza.
Yeah, I think so.
I was kind of like, you're kind of like, you don't know if you should clap or smile. Or you're like, dude, I hope that dude is alive. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so I'll have to go with that. But other than that, for me, I feel like the other people who have, the person that's been able to steal the spotlight for me at number two, I'm gonna have to go with Magomed Ankulaev.
Okay.
What he was able to do, the stalking of Alex Pereira and then beating him on his feet. Going for takedowns, but wasn't really committed to takedowns, and he was able to really, beat Alex Pereira just based on what he's good at, the striking department. But he was able to really mix, and he had Alex Pereira on that back foot, and he was a lot of people that don't know fighting, Ankulaev was disarming him with fakes. So when he would fake, like he would get Pereira a little fidgety, and he would disarm him. If you allow Pereira to sit and kick, and he'll break the foundation first, and then he'll start to rack in and bring in those hands. And I feel like the fact that Magomed Ankulaev was a southpaw, and the fact that he disarmed him with fakes was the key in that fight, and not necessarily making him think wrestling, but yet never getting a takedown, but making him think was key.
Yeah, I like that choice. I mean, like I said off the top, the only person to force a title change of a UFC belt this year. So that in itself is a massive achievement. I saw Chael Sonnen say this week that he thinks an immediate rematch is a bad idea for Alex Pereira, maybe not enough time to adjust and everything. Would you agree with that sentiment? Like, should he get another fight in or let Ankulaev fight someone else first?
I think if I'm Alex Pereira, I would put him through the ringer. I would just wait, let him fight one more time, put him against somebody that's dangerous, and just to scout him a little bit more. And the only reason why I say that, just have Alex just wait. Alex just travels too much, bro. Like, travels too much. You could see it. I mean, that shit's going to catch up to you eventually. Like, even for me, Mike, like traveling and whatnot, like, fuck. Like, now I'm just like, dude, I can see why I've been going through what I've been going through. It's, if you don't commit to that lifestyle, and don't dedicate yourself to the sport of mixed martial arts, like, especially with that age, like, it will catch up to you. So I feel like Alex Pereira, he likes to have fun, a little too much fun, in the sense where, oh, yeah, it's all good. I can jump on a plane. Dude, all that stuff, like, I come back with, like, you know, you come back different fatigue. And I feel like it was just a combination of all that. What do you think?
They showed him on the screen. He was in Mexico, and like, he looked tired, just like off when they showed him on camera. So yeah, that is concerning. I mean, you get Ankulaev to fight, Yuri Prohoshka. Not many people leave the cage with that man without taking at least some damage. So that might be a good idea if you're Pereira. But would you say, like, with all the travel, the same things you're going through, are you just talking about like results wise or?
Yeah. And I think that stuff will just eventually, it'll eventually get you. So I go back and even think of, Daniel Cormier versus Stipe. It had nothing to do with Daniel's age. He's traveling. He's podcast. He's doing the analyst job. Like, how are you going to be the dude that's just eat, sleeps, and train at home? You know what I'm saying? Like, that fatigue will eventually get you. So I just feel like if there's one area where Alex probably needs to make a transition, it's going to have to be there.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Okay, my number. Oh, go ahead.
He doesn't drink. He doesn't smoke. Yep. But traveling, he doesn't know it, or he probably does, but it's almost like it's hard to go back and be everything that you are, because now it's kind of a part of him, the persona, the shama, you know, people get the glory or whatnot. But if you want to be the guy like Magomed Ankulaev, I mean, you're going to have to be holding five aces. You have to go back and be a Rocky Balboa.
Yeah, like if a main event falls out in a couple of months, people are going to be like, they almost just expect him to be ready to step in when over and over, it's a lot to ask of you. And I'm sure all that travels a lot easier at 28 than it is 38.
Yeah, but think about it too. Like nobody has really fought Alex Pereira different. Mm-hmm. They've all just stood there, and that's just the light heavyweight. That's the difference between light heavyweight, heavyweight, and the lighter weight divisions. We all have to be extremely complete. What do you think? Do you think a kickboxer, Mike, would do the exact same thing at 135 pounds without necessarily having all the other tools?
No, that's what I mean. How many have we seen any glory guys sub 185 come into the UFC? There isn't really any.
Yeah, and I remember me telling Alex Pereira too. This, I was like, when I saw him in Austin, I'm like, yeah, man, this is your biggest matchup, your biggest challenge is Uncle Live, and that's it. And then now we kind of saw a little bit of what happened. But if Alex is able to make those transitions and stay disciplined with just kicking and just kick, break the foundation, eventually everything will come.
Yeah, there's a path to victory for him in the rematch. It doesn't seem hopeless at all. Okay, the number two on my list who I wanted to spotlight was Sean Brady. I mean, when you go into enemy territory and submit a former champion who's never been finished before, I mean, that's about as good as it gets, and do it on somewhat short notice as the replacement guy. I mean, I thought that was just a really, really great performance, although I'm sure all the English fans did not like it very much.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's a really good pick. Jesus Christ, man. It almost like the first time that I saw Sean Brady get done up by Bilal Muhammad, I was like, man, I wonder if this dude's spirit has just been snatched away. We've seen that happen to a lot of fighters. When you lose in a fashion where it's just belittling, like they don't, like you almost feel like they don't come back the same. But yeah, that's a great pick, dude. You almost maybe want to flip everything, but you're right. Sean Brady's composure, his chain wrestling with the striking, his top control, it's absolutely like ridiculous. But to me, at number three.
Or would this be your number one, since you gave the fighting nerds and then just gave
okay,
the show
okay, notes. Yeah. So at number three, you know what? I'll probably go Sean Brady again.
Okay.
That's such a good one, dude. That one's hard. And particularly, I love his story because of how he got beat up by the former champ and then what he's doing to now to guys that Bilal has fought. And it's just showing you that maybe he did have a – Maybe he just had an off night, and I think that makes it interesting. He's a younger guy, his striking is there, his grappling is there, and I think he's got that chip on his shoulder. So, but if I had to pick it between the order of the fighting nerds,
Ankalaev,
and
Sean Brady,
oof, yeah, I'm gonna have to go with But even, you got the other thing too, you got Imamov and Gaethje too.
Yeah, there's some other ones. I mean, I could list off a couple more names here, but I guess we'll, on the point of Sean Brady before we move on for him, is the fight to make him and your podcast partner, Kamaru Usman, or do you think the timing, the logic doesn't add up for that right now?
No, 100%. Kamaru wants that. Kamaru, that's what he wants. So, you know, they have thrown a lot of names out there. And he said, he's like, I want Sean Brady. Like he says, it was Sean Brady, Rachmaninoff, Shafkat, and then Buckley.
Yeah.
So Buckley's number three on that list. But you were thinking, I was thinking that they're probably going to set that fight up. But I feel like Rachmaninoff has to get the next title shot. He has to because of what he's done. So yeah, the number one contender. And I want to say Kamaru's three or four.
I think he's four, so he's right there.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense for a guy like Sean Brady. I think with him and Kamaru, obviously, dude, Kamaru, yes, he does have three losses in a row. But I mean, there's a lot. I mean, what about Kamaru Usman versus Carlos Pratas too?
Yeah, those are all fun fights. I mean, I just think Kamaru needs to fight one and win one, and then he's going to be right there, especially if Bilal keeps the belt. I know some stuff happened on the podcast with you guys.
Sorry, can I tell you something, Mike? It was. I almost got kicked, bro. Like, there's punches were thrown, dude. And I had a messed up ankle at that time. So, Kamaru Usman, and Bilal, dude. Bilal almost kicked me to my head, dude. Luckily, I did a little slip. But, yeah, it was definitely rated R.
Yeah, no. So I've heard. I didn't want to spill the beans too much. I know when you guys are ready to talk about it in full, the time will come for that. But I guess for me, for my top performer on the list so far, a former opponent of yours, I thought Merab Dvalishvili at UFC 311 was great as well. Solely maybe, Henry, because he ended up breaking in that fight George St. Pierre's all-time takedown record, which had stood since November 2013. Like, that's insane. You're the wrestler. You understand. How hard is it to freaking get 92 takedowns in a career inside that octagon? It's unreal.
Yeah, golly, you're too good, man. You can't prepare, bro. I got to agree with you. Yeah. And particularly who he's beat. Jan, Cejudo, Aldo, Sean O'Methley. And then the one that really surprised me was Umar Nurmagomedov. You're right, dude. That is the number one. Like, Barash should be getting a lot more credit, and he should probably maybe be up there, maybe top three pound for pound. You can maybe even put him one, quite honestly, because he's in the deepest weight division, and his resume is absolutely ridiculous and how active he has stayed. So, Mike, I'm going to have to agree with you, and it hurts, but I have to go with that. I'm going to have to go with that Georgian.
Yeah. Who are we bumping then? Are you bumping the Fighting Nerds to your top four maybe, since they're not an individual?
Yeah, I'm probably going to go. So I'll go Merab, Ankulaev. Ankulaev and Brady.
Yeah, no, that's a great top three. I had similar on there. I guess some of the other ones I noted that had great performances, I guess, so far. I thought Islam Makhachev beating Moicano just under the circumstances, you know, like, it's crazy one-day opponent switch for a champion. Didn't have to take that fight and then goes out and wins it in round one. So I think he got some props for that as well. It's unideal, to say the least.
Yeah, and what's your take on 55? Do you think – I personally think they're going to give it – I think they're going to give Gaethje the matchup, and I think they're probably pushing Charles Oliveira versus Ilya.
Yeah, so, okay, we can turn the page and get into that. I mean, the other stuff I wanted to talk to you about was, I guess, some of these key storylines going into the second quarter, and that's most definitely one of the things, and I think that ties into, like, another question I wrote down. What's going to be the main event of International Fight Week? And it feels like it could be a lightweight title fight, but will it be Islam versus Ilya, Islam versus Justin Topuria, or will it be him versus Charles or him versus Armin? There's many options.
Yeah, I personally think they're probably going to give – I mean, Ilya made just a bold statement recently. He said the UFC promised him if he relinquished his spot that he would get the title shot. So if that's true, they're probably going to do Ilya Topuria versus, versus Islam Makhachev. But I remember talking about – I remember talking to Khabib, and Khabib said this. He's like, it's not fair for Ilya to skip the line and go after the title shot with Islam, because that's all Islam's been doing. He gave Volkanovski a couple of times, and he has gone up. So I don't even think it's going to be Islam's choice. I think Khabib's going to step in and be like, he needs to fight the number one contender. And he said, if Ilya does beat the number one contender, then sure, we'll do that. So I personally think that Islam will fight anybody, anytime, anywhere. There's a quote on him at the PI that says that. Yeah. But I think the person is going to more likely play bad cop is going to be Khabib Nurmagomedov. He's going to say no. So for that reason, I am guessing it's going to be Justin Gaethje versus Islam Makhachev, International Fight Week.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, these are why you guys have coaches and managers, right? Like, ultimately, you will step in there and fight anyone, but you need the things that either make you the biggest money or do the most for your legacy, and that's on your team to help guide you in that direction as well. So if that's not the fight, I don't think people should direct their anger or disappointment towards Islam.
Yeah, of course. But I also feel like what could happen too is they could probably give Ilya Dustin Poirier in Louisiana, whatever that may be. So I'm thinking, because Charles doesn't want to fight Ilya Topuria. He says, I'll fight him when I'm champ.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much pull he has there, but if a fighter's already saying that he won't fight somebody for that title shot, because he did already get the opportunity and he lost, he doesn't have leverage. You know, the UFC will they'll shelf you, dude. You know what I'm saying? Like, they will definitely shelf you. So I can see Ilya Topuria versus Dustin Poirier.
Yeah, that was one I've thought about as well. I mean, if Dustin, I guess, wants the biggest fight, that's probably the biggest one for him for his retirement. And for Ilya, if he can win that, I mean, there's no one bigger to, I guess, take the star power away from than Dustin Poirier in the lightweight division right now.
Well, of course. And then think about it. Dustin Poirier did say he's only fighting legends for his retirement fight. And Daniel Tapora just changed his name to Legend. Oh my
God. Could you imagine if that's one of the main reasons why he did it?
And we're probably onto something, Mike.
We might be. That's funny. Well, I mean, speaking of that, another thing I wrote down for like a storyline to watch, I guess, is how the UFC 315 main event between Bilal Muhammad and Jack Della Maddalena could tie into like multiple divisions. Because I think if Jack is able to beat Bilal, which I know is an uphill climb, then Islam's door is wide open to go to 170, which I know he's wanted to do and get that second belt. Then everything changes.
Yeah, but again, Bilal he's playing this. And again, you go back and watch all the interviews that I've done when I interviewed Khabib. Mm-hmm. And even Khabib was like, and I like Bilal, so this isn't me shitting on him. Islam will go up and actually fight him. And even Khabib said, listen, man, I barely, you know, Islam's my brother. This guy's my friend. Like, it's different. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's time for Islam to go up. I mean, he owes it to himself. I even told him, I'm like, bro, as good as you are and all these defenses, like, my merit is better than yours because I have a second belt. You can have all kinds of title defenses, but it's the merit, the fact that you can leave as double champion. That's something that he wants to do prior to really retire. So I can see a retirement in Islam's future sooner rather than later, but he doesn't want to go without that second belt. The question is, will Bilal Muhammad fight him? Yeah. That's the big question. I 100% agree with you, but will they do it?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting situation. I mean, I don't know how much leverage Bilal has to turn down something like that if Islam and his team are on board, but they share a manager, same as yours. So I don't really know how stuff like that works behind the scenes.
Yeah. But it's a fight that I feel like Dana will just finally be like, all right, man, what do you guys want to do? Mm-hmm. You know? But then again, it just holds everybody back at 170 pounds. Yeah. So this is why Sean Brady needs to fight a guy like Kamaru Usman. Or maybe he needs to fight Shavkat Rakhmonov, because if that whole thing happens, you can't just wait that long. You cannot. It's not good for you.
Yeah, it messes up a lot in both divisions at lightweight and welterweight. That's why I kind of wrote it down, because I guess in this scenario, say he does go up against the winner of that, does he fight another lightweight title defense before, or do you just wait and then they either do an interim or he vacates the belt?
Okay, you're talking about who? You're talking about
if Islam like was to go up and fight for the 170 against the winner of Bilal and Jack Della Maddalena, is he vacating? Is he fighting before then?
Oh, I think he deserves it. I think he deserves to keep it for what he's done. He's active, man. So I don't think that's true. I just think he wants to win it and then go back down because he knows that 170 pounds, it's fucking dangerous. It's dangerous. It's different going up. I mean, you're literally talking about going up 15 pounds. It is different. Practice. And actually fighting in a cage with somebody heavier, I've been there before, the power is different. So, but there's also pros to it too. Islam's a big cat, man. He's a big 55er, man. I personally feel like he's gonna feel better at 170 pounds, even better because he doesn't have to cut all that crazy weight. And I do feel that if he was to go up to 170 pounds, I don't see him going back down to 155. I really don't. That happened to me, dude. I was like, oh my God, I feel so good. I don't got to be miserable. Even Khabib was miserable when he was fighting at 155 pounds. You don't think that was the reason why he even retired too?
Yeah.
Guys, this weight cutting shit is no joke. Khabib is now like over, he's probably like 220, dude. Khabib, he's a big boy. Think about it. That dude was making, and he filled in like perfect. Like everything, he's 155 pounds.
Yeah, weight cutting. We could do a whole other show talking about that, but we'll move on. The next storyline I wrote down is, in these next 3 months, will we get an announcement, Henry, of Jon Jones versus Tom Aspinall? Not will the fight happen, but will we get the official UFC announcement, Dana White, Instagram video, however they choose to announce it? Do you think we get this between now and the end of June?
It all depends on Uncle Dana. And I've talked to John about this. I says, this is what you do, John. I says, what you do is, Joe Rogan just came up with the whole $30 million deal. Keep it at $30 million. He just helped you. If they're willing to give Khabib, this is what I told him. I said, quote unquote, this is what should be the storyline. If they're willing to give Khabib Nurmagomedov $40 million, what is the greatest of all time worth? If Joe Rogan just said there's a $30 million deal in there, mm-hmm. I says, do it. I says, stick to that number. You're undefeated. You deserve it. And then Turkey's been giving money like crazy. I says, why don't you get Turkey involved? Get Turkey involved, do it in Saudi Arabia, make it one of the biggest fights of all time and do it there. That's how you get your money. It depends, man. I think John also knows that well, we all know that Tom is dangerous. But there's just too many tools that John has. Too many tools. And I feel like this is where Aspinall is at. But he's not much of a kicker, dude. He's not much of a grappler, too. And I feel like those are things that John brings. And he's too smart, man. As soon as this guy starts coming, boom, there's a clinch. There's a leg. There's all that. But he just has to be careful in that first round. And I think after that, it's all gravy. But if John Jones is able to get Turkey Al-Sheikh involved and Dana White, and then make it public, but there's a, hey, listen, I want to fight, but this is what I feel like I deserve. He's gonna have to come to a point where he's gonna have to make it public before he loses that big payday. Before time's like, all right, man, John, and John might be sincere with himself, be like, all right, man, I think this is it. So I could see either one, but yeah. if he gets those 30 millions, Mike, you know he's fighting.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to get all 30, but from what I've heard, it might be somewhat close to that number, or at least much higher than people would expect. And I don't know, I feel like we might get it in New York in November, which would be another year-long layoff for John, but like 17 months for Tom. I don't really know how that could impact the fight. No one would think that Tom Aspinall would go into this fight with a longer layoff than John Jones, but here we are.
Yeah, no kidding, man. I think, could he get the job done, man? I just don't see. John looks so good, man. He looks so good in his last two fights. He finished one guy in a minute and something, against a guy that had a very, very close match against a former champion, Francis Ngannou. Mm-hmm. And he just took out Stipe, man, within three in a spectacular fashion with the sidekick to the straight body. Yeah. It just shows, man, that people just have other dynamics. And we got to think about it, too. Does Tom Aspinall have that 5-round threshold? It's different. You may do it in practice, but dude, you're going up against the greatest of all time in New York amongst all of his peers. I mean, that's a question to be asked too. Could he go 5 rounds against?
We barely know if he can go 5 minutes hard. We haven't had the chance to see it. He's finishing everyone in a minute, so it's crazy.
And that's the pros and cons about finishing people. Mm-hmm. Okay, you can do it under one, but can you do it? Can you get past round one? And then we'll see how his gas take is.
Yeah, one of the interesting things Tom has said is like, I know you're a tape studier, you like to break down the opponents. John loves doing that. And he said, one of my advantages is there's barely any tape on me. And that's going to like throw John for a loop a little bit in his preparation. Is there anything to that?
No, not really. I think there's always a person that has to make the adjustments. And typically when somebody has power, you have to be the person to adjust from that. Because you know why? Because power is different. So the person that's going to have to adjust in this fight, it's not going to be Tom Aspinall, because you know he's coming forward. You know, he's going to be fidgety. He's like, oh, shit, because he's accustomed to getting rid of people in under 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. John's just too smart. John can play two things. Press him, get him going backwards, leg kicks, or he can even play cat and mouse and allow Tom to come in and then look for that takedown like he did with Ciryl Gane. You know what I'm saying? So those are two, or he could play a little bit of both and mix it.
Yeah. Well, one of the most anticipated fights in the sport. We will see if they can get it done in these next few months here. A couple more here on my list, Henry. Can Sean O'Malley make the adjustments to beat Merab Dvalishvili in a rematch? It seems like that's looming potentially for the summer. What do you think? Like, is this feels like a big fight for bantamweight, but it also feels like the downside for Sean if he loses is just huge.
Yeah. I think the best chance that O'Malley has is keeping him to the body, breaking down Merab's body, and then staying in the center. But I just don't. The only reason why I said is because now looking at my fight back with and using lateral movements, mm-hmm. but I just don't think that Sean is. I think that's just a bad style for him, you know, with somebody with a relentless gas tank. And does he have the takedown defense to just stay in the middle and just stick him to the body and then move laterally, like really good? So even when I fought Merab, like the game plan in round one was great. Like everything that we fucking talked about, we did. You know what I'm saying? Catch him with that dip hook, like level change, boom. Mm-hmm. Move laterally as he's coming, like throw him off his game. It's just that the reality is, dude, I just got tired. Mm-hmm. I got tired going into that second because of my groin. I wasn't able to wrestle for like 5 weeks going into that fight. And I think that was a big mistake on my side. And I think the I think a lot of that stuff kind of fatigued me, is having to think of takedowns, getting taken down, things like that. So you need that threshold to beat Merab, which is the wrestling threshold. And if you don't have that, yeah, you're screwed. Now Merab has tasted a little bit of O'Malley's power, and he's probably just gonna go ahead and go right away, start the level changing, disarming with his fakes, his feints, making them think strike, and then boom, the takedown comes.
Yep. Love that insight. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what adjustments he tries to make. The next one, which could potentially be a title fight in the summer, Henry, as well. If Kayla Harrison defeats Juliana Pena, does she threaten Henry Cejudo's status as the greatest combat sports athlete of all time?
No, man. Hell no. No. He says she has to. I think for women, maybe. Easy.
Yeah.
For women, but it's different, dude. There's different genders. I mean, you're gonna put up my skills up to hers, and you're gonna watch us freaking both are, but you're gonna see that wrestling's just the king of kings, man. Look, there's no, we don't have something to grab onto like you do in judo. Mm-hmm. I like Kayla, and she is tough, and I do believe that she is going to win. But no, man, you're gonna have to do something a whole lot more. I mean, look at the legends who I beat. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Demetrius Johnson on an 11 fight, TJ Dillashaw, EPOs, Dominic Snooze, you know, on all that. And the fact that I was simultaneous champ. So unless Kayla, I mean, 135 pounds, there's no more Amanda.
Yeah.
You know? So the answer is no, Mike.
Yeah, no, I'm being a little crass. I know you and Kayla have had this little rivalry for a while.
I'm afraid of Kayla, dude. Like, Kayla... I can see why she became a dude. She's fucking super competitive, dude.
Yeah, she's very intense. And yeah, I mean, again, what you said, like there is no Demetrius Johnson for her to beat unless Kayla Harris or unless Amanda Nunes comes back. But even on the back of that, the competition just isn't the same. So it's hard to match when you beat the people you did in those title fights. So
not just that, but even going to the Olympics too, Mike. Like, yeah, I was the last seed at the Olympic Games. I wasn't supposed to even go or win it. And I can win in the whole damn thing. So I love my story, and I love what sport that I did it in, the sport of wrestling.
Yep. Another one I had here is what, if any, progress will be made on the UFC's TV rights negotiations. I think the exclusive negotiation period with ESPN is up in about 2 weeks. And then I think it's April 14th. And then they can speak to everyone, and the deal runs out at the end of this year. I guess as a fighter, as someone with your head, like, is this a story you're intrigued in following? I mean, you hear they're trying to get over $1 billion a year within this deal, and I think the last deal total was like $1.7 billion over 7 years. So this will be about to be a lot more money.
That was for ESPN, or that was for what?
That was for the ESPN deal that they signed in 2019, which you were on the first card of, for people who do not remember.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that did some numbers too. I think they got like 700,000 subscribers, something crazy like that. I mean, where TKO is going, it's And from what it looks like, is they're probably, I think the Netflix has it written all over it. The Netflix needs to conquer that combat market space, and then slowly but surely, I think a lot of these sports will follow. You know, I think TKO is going that route, and I think they might get rid of pay-per-view. You know, and I'm not sure how is it that it actually works, but I think the other model with Netflix, depending on who's watching, is how they get paid, I believe.
Yeah.
Like the UFC could really make up that number through that, because if you watch Netflix now, like, what, you know, the streaming that's number one, it's always WWE.
Yeah,
it's WWE, and man, everybody and their damn mama has Netflix. You don't have to worry about pirating the fights no more. If you get more eyeballs, I think that's the way to do it too, because we don't pay pay-per-view for football, we don't pay pay-per-view for a lot of these things, and I think that could be the new model, where they don't have to worry about who's stealing what. And I think Netflix really wants to take in on I think they want to conquer that space. And I think they have, man, I want to say they have more of a budget now than ESPN, man, quite honestly.
Yeah, I mean, they have unlimited money, it feels like, as does Amazon and Apple and all these platforms who are seemingly interested. I think it might get split up between maybe a couple different platforms.
Oh, really? Yeah. But does Netflix want to do that? You know what I'm saying? If it's the golden rule, the guy with the gold makes the rules. I don't think that would be smart, but I know Dana's already made a comment that he's upset that there's a lot of glitching going on at ESPN.
Yeah.
That tells you a lot. He's like, all right, man, get your shit together.
Yeah, so, the 313 was bad. A lot of people were having really bad issues getting into ESPN Plus. They had to give it away for free, I think, the next day, which you always wonder, like, how does that impact Alex Pereira's purse, who went in there as the champion with the pay-per-view points? So can't imagine anyone was happy.
Oh, my God. Is that what happened?
Yeah, like it was a lot. Even my colleagues, I was fortunate enough to be there. I was cage side, so like I didn't have to worry about this. But everyone on, you know, Twitter and in our Slack channel is being like, I can't order this thing. I can't get in on any platform. And that's about the worst thing that could happen for a big pay-per-view.
Yeah, no, but I think that's the way. And I think Netflix is really going to pump in money, not just through the UFC, but all these other outlets to where I do believe that Netflix or potentially maybe YouTube TV, like they're taking over the game. Like a lot of these different platforms, man, they got so much more competitors now. But I can see the UFC going the Netflix route and then scratching the pay-per-view and then more eyeballs and then doing a whole lot more traveling now and maybe just really pushing the apex completely out too.
Yeah, I think the last thing there is the key that a lot of people would like to see happen, but I don't know how many less Apex shows we're getting, we'll see. But you look at the crowd, I mean, you were there in Mexico, like you can't match those moments when you have 20,000 people in an arena. It's just not the same.
No, but even think about it too much. They're even beefing right now to where they're not even giving like the UFC like the right like headspace. You know, the UFCs are here, like they've been pissed a little bit of what's going on with these fight cards. Yeah. And how down, like, and the quality of fights. So I think there's already some animosity between ESPN and the UFC.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the product is in a weird space right now. Like, I know it's always ebbs and flows and transitions with, you know, enough stars and this and that, and the fights are great. But, like, I don't know, I said 132 fights so far this year. Don't quote me on this exact number, but the decision rate, I think, is, like, pretty high at this point. It feels like a lot of fights going the distance. Is it, like, what is this? Is it just the level of the sport is raising so high that all these fights are more competitive? Some people thought it was the gloves for a minute there. I don't think that's true, but like, I don't know. Is this just how it is, or is there something you can pinpoint?
That's probably just that. I think they probably just know that all right, man, we're gonna save a little bit of what we really have and give you guys just enough to where we can have those big fights and hit it with the bang for Netflix. Mm-hmm. Oh, but not just that, but the UFC is underneath like softball. Like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it just gives you an idea where things are going. But I think that's the move. I mean, it's always good to bring the sport to new heights, and anything that they could do to elevate the sport and make more money. I mean, obviously the UFC has always been about, you know, it's always been the cash cow. They're going to do what's best for them. But I also feel like, you know, ESPN doesn't necessarily – I mean, they've always televised it, whether it's a competitor, because they're a sporting channel. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see how that's going to actually work, but I think the Netflix route is the route they're going to end up making in the scratching pay-per-view.
Yeah. I'd love to see you on one of those cards, because I think you fought on almost every platform. You know, Fox, I think you did, like you said, pay-per-view. Yeah, Spike. You fought on Spike? No, I think you were, you were post-Spike a little bit, but pretty much all the other ones you got on.
Yeah, and you imagine if Spike would have really paid the UFC to stay, which is what they should have done.
Yeah,
I mean, the network of Spike would have gone through the roof, and I don't even know if it existed. No,
it doesn't. It turned into multiple different things. It's now, I think, like the Paramount Channel, which is folded into an app or something. But yeah, it's not in an ideal spot. I guess last thing here, Henry, the final storyline I'm curious about is you. How's the health and the eye and everything, and how are we doing
physically? Yeah, it's and I sound like a crybaby, dude, but it's the worst injury that I've had. I got a second opinion. I actually went to Sean O'Methley's doctor. I went to one of them, and then I'm just like, he said my eye would be good in a month, but then I'm like, every time I watch TV or looking down, like I still see double. So it's been a month. It's been a month, Mike. And then look,
I can see that
inside of my. It was a little peaky that went inside, and it's still I'm still not 100%. So the doctor said it's looking like another month. Korean Zombie has the same symptoms, and it's the same reason why he had to retire. Like, dude, I'm seeing double.
Oh shit.
And so when I point my eye to a certain way, like I'll see 2 feet. You know? Luckily, like it's only when I lay down or if I look down. But it took me like 5 days, Mike, for my eye to stop seeing double when I got hurt. So it's not the fact that I couldn't see, or just seeing like two people. You don't know which one's which. Because I can go out and reach it, and I'm catching the wrong thing. You know, it's a serious business, and I hope. I talked to Mark Ratner at UC Maxwell. They're really going to make a change on eye pokes to where the warning's already out. Like, there's no more warning. You know, I got fucked, dude. Like, I wanted to fight. Yeah. Like, I wanted to fight. I just wanted to fight with fucking two eyes.
Yeah, I mean, dude, we could sit here and talk about this. It really annoyed me. I mean, at worst, you got screwed. If they want to do the technical decision, it should have been a draw. It should have been the point deduction. So, like, at worst, that should have been it. It should have been the draw and the technical decision or a no contest. The fact you got a loss is completely idiotic.
It's what it is. But, like, I'm working on it to get it overturned. Like, I have a couple lawyers already looking into it.
But that shit never happens. Never works.
Yeah, because you go back and think of Gervonta Davis versus Roach.
Yeah.
Fucking that's – what the fuck? Like, what?
Yeah.
But you know why that's going on? There could be a big, big-time lawsuit there. It's because they're not following the rules. Like, I feel like if Roach really pushes the envelope, like, super, super serious, then, dude, he'd be a world champ going up. He'd be a two-time world champion. And I feel like Roach and his team, if they're smart, they'd stay on that and just take this thing to legal action, because the rules are the rules. You can't freaking take a knee and then, hey, I got something in my eye.
Yeah.
It rubs. Like, okay, so let me take a time out in the fight. Let me get a drink. Like, you know, get whatever. When I got hit, I should have probably did the same thing. Look at my eye, do the whole damn thing. But it's crazy that these things happen. It just lets you know that, man, you can say fucking mafia-like, you know? Yeah,
it's scary. I mean, you didn't deserve that result. So, like, have you filed officially an appeal, or is that just kind of in the process?
Well, I filed an appeal, but I think when I filed the appeal, I kind of did give my whole 2 cents. But I think I'm gonna get a couple lawyers involved to actually do it correctly and see if we can overturn that.
Yeah, 2-0 contest would be the ideal. Well, right?
Yeah, I'd be happy with that. I mean, my biggest thing, dude, I lost money. You know, you think I'm trying to fight for free? Like, that's why I fight, dude. I fight for fucking for my family, for financial freedom. All right, you see these belts?
Yeah.
I already got them, dude.
When you say lost money, you just mean like the not getting the win bonus, or just what it came out to, expecting the win bonus and what you invested? That,
man. The win bonus, of course, that's huge, man. It's a huge one. I get paid really good, but I'm not complaining. But I am complaining on the fact that I did tell the referee that I'm seeing double. Or the doctor, when he said, hey, what's going on? I was like, yeah, I'm seeing double. All right, take your time. Which I get it too, because I didn't want to fight. And I said, no, I'm good. That's why I kept asking, like, the clock. I'm like, how much time do we have left? So my whole thing, Mike, was to fight for that minute and 16 seconds, get the minute, so that give me 2 minutes and 16 seconds left to allow my eye to recover. It just never came back.
Yeah, well, that shows the extent of the damage then, obviously. And I sincerely hope it's not anything that continues to affect you, because I assume you want to continue your career. Does this make you rethink things of, like, a serious injury like this?
Yeah, and honestly, Mike, I just feel like I never really saw the sport of mixed martial arts kind of dangerous. And I think I've been talking to my wife, and I think this could potentially be my last fight, man.
The one that just happened?
No. Like, one more and that's it. Okay. I mean, if I can run it back with Song, I'd be happy with that. But if it's not Song, dude, I would like anybody at the UFC's want to give me. Like, I want to be able to play with my kids, dude. I want to be able to not fucking lose an eye. And you know what I'm saying? Might as well. That's kind of how I'm feeling right now, to be quite honest with you, dude.
Yeah, I know that can change. Why, if you're feeling like that, though, why even do one more, knowing the risks of what could happen in another fight?
No, because I don't want to leave with fucking getting my eye. I don't mind losing, but I don't want to leave. I don't want to leave fucking getting.
You don't want that to be your final memory in the octagon.
My freaking eyeball. Yeah. I just can't end like that.
You know? No.
And I'm grateful, dude. Like, I love Dana and everybody who has been. This isn't a shot at the UFC, man. I just want to, you know, they've given me a platform to really help out my family, to put myself in a great position to where I can set myself up for the future. But at the same time, dude, my health is number one, dude, above anything. Mm-hmm. It's happened. Like I said, man, I was talking to Korean Zombies. The Korean Zombie's like, no, I get it, but I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, he's like, look, bro, even when I look at a certain angle, like, I'll move my eye, like, I everything would just either get blurry or you start seeing two of everything. So when I look down, and even when I like lay down on the bed, like it's hard to watch it because I'm seeing one TV here and then another one's kind of falling off, and the crown molding of the of my bedroom it's like all like slanted like that.
That's like my nightmare scenario. I mean, I've dabbled with the idea of maybe doing like an amateur fight or something at one point, but it always keeps coming back to that. Like if something happens to my eyes, like I need to see to continue to do this job and, you know, have a life. So that one scares me a little bit. I know like, it, you know, you don't even know when this is going to clear up, but when they announce that Noche UFC card in Guadalajara, did any part of you think of maybe wanting to be on that? Would that be a nice final fight, or do you not want to fight on down there?
Did you see how the Mexicans booed?
I did. That's why I asked.
Whatever, bro. I enjoy being the hill. You know, I did the whole Spanish podcast too to kind of give back to the people, you know, where I really go out there and get to know all these fighters that are up and coming. I'm not sure yet. September. What, September 16th around that time?
September 13th is the date.
Yeah. I'm not sure what the UFC has planned. But I definitely do want to, I definitely do want to fight sometime in the fall. Let my eye heal, do this in another 30 days. But if it doesn't get better, bro, I just don't know when I'll be back.
Yeah.
But sure, man, I think this is the last one, Mike, and that's all she wrote.
Yeah, well, I think you said there you've set yourself up well for the future, Henry. Part of the reason I wanted to talk to you is because I think you're one of the great minds. I know you've done desk work like on the UFC shows before. I hope there's a lot more of that in the future. You have your amazing podcast with Kamaru Usman. So, like, you're not going anywhere, even if you're done fighting. You know,
sure.
We want you in the sport, and I think you're a great mind for it. What about, like, the coaching side? Is that – I know it was, like, a hot thing there where everyone was talking about, I'm going to train with Henry Cejudo for a minute.
I just want to give back. Like, it's up to you that they want to come and live here and learn.
Yeah.
I'm not a coach. I'm more of a mentor / counselor. Like, I'm not going to be going to your fights on Saturday. I'm like, even when Davidson fought Brandon, I was like, hey, bro, I'm going to show up a day before to get it. Dude, I can't go fight. Even if you're fighting for a world title, because you're talking about like the UFC desk show. Like, I was offered something to do. I'm just like, nah, man, I can't be gone. I love my kids and my family too much. I was even offered an ambassador job when I was, you know, campaigning with President Trump, and I just looked at I love my country, but looked at the amount of time that I'm going to be gone from home. I'm like, yeah, I can't do it, man.
Yeah,
that means I'd leave fighting, I'd leave all the concept that I'm doing, my family, you know, for the best of this country. It's like, I love my country, God, family, yeah, God, family, country. That's the way it goes. And if it doesn't make sense with my family, dude, I'm out. You know, yeah. But I am planning on helping a lot of people like that. Rai from Japan, that the 125 pounder, he's going to come down next month.
Horiguchi or Kai Asakura?
Rai Saria, is that what it is?
Oh, Rai Saria. Yeah.
So he's going to come down. I'm going to really pinpoint a lot of these guys. A lot of people want to come and train and just learn from me. I'm about it. I just want to help out. I'm not your coach. I don't take anything from these cats. I really don't. I just enjoy teaching and kind of like, hey, man, you're the boss of your own damn career. Find the right team. Find the right coaches. Put yourself in the best positions possible. Be fundamentally sound. And I play more of that position coach, where I'm not your coach, but I'll dissect your position and everything that your coach is doing. And that's how I've always modeled with Wei Li, John, you know, some of the best names in all of them. Valentina, you know, Demetrius Johnson. You know, I'm used more like that without having to be in the corner with the bucket.
Yeah, no, I like that. It seems like your priorities are very much in order, Henry. So I think first priority, of course, is the health. So sure. I hope that gets sorted out soon, man. And I really appreciate you being here. We covered a lot today on your first appearance here on The Bonfire, Henry. Hopefully there's many more appearances here on the show in the future. Appreciate you, man. I'm going to take a quick break and be right back to wrap things up. And that does it for another episode of the Bonfire Podcast. Thanks so much to Henry for his time and his insights there. I thought that was a great conversation, but I'd love to hear the feedback of what you all thought out there in the comments. Did we omit any standouts from Q1 or any points of intrigue going into the next 3 months? Let me know your opinion. Sometimes I feel like people like Henry and myself are just so deep in the MMA bubble that we almost kind of overlook things that may other people may see from the outside there. So it's always good to hear your thoughts and how they compare to ours here on the show. So please share them. Love to read them. Love to hear them and engage with you guys as much as I can in the comments as well. Beyond that, I will be heading to Miami next week for the absolute banger that is UFC 314.
It's a shame we lost the Jeff Neal versus Carlos Prochas fight, but still such an amazing fight card. So many great storylines, as we touched on a little bit here. And I promise we are going to have some great coverage from Florida, both on MMA Junkie and then here on the Bonfire as well. In the meantime, enjoy the 2025 PFL tournament opener on Thursday, the UFC Vegas 105 on Saturday, headlined by Josh Emmett versus Lerone Murphy. Thanks so much to my man Kamikaze for helping produce the program as always. And until next week, I hope everyone has a great time enjoying the fights, and we will see you back here by the Bonfire.